Okay, if everybody has the sheet. I'd like to welcome everybody to the fifth session in our ongoing series on halachic change in the modern world. We've spent so far four sessions discussing firstly the issue of the sealing of the Talmud and the technical issues that prevent us from overriding the Psach Halacha of the Talmud, the Mishnah and the Gemara. We spent a session on that. We spent a session looking at reasons for mitzvahs and when the reasons no longer apply, whether the mitzvah still applies and the halacha still applies. We looked at different aspects of that. In the third session, we looked at scientific issues and how we deal with Chazal making certain scientific assumptions or statements which do not appear to us today to be in accordance with modern science, and how we deal with that. And the last time, we devoted an entire class to the concept of Nishtane HaTeva, and how we look at the possibility that the world may have changed biologically, physically, scientifically, etc. Today, I would like to move on to something which I think is something more controversial, which is the following question. We find that there have been unquestionable social changes in the world as a whole, and therefore also in the Jewish world, since the time that a number of these halachas were set. Indeed, social change happens faster and faster and accelerates more and more as time goes on. The world is not the same place that it was 100 years ago, not even the same place that it was 10 years ago. In 1990, a book was written about how the world will look in the year 2000. And one word that book did not include was the word internet, because nobody in 1990 even envisaged that there would be such a thing. And yet 10 years later, there was mass saturation of the internet. We live in a world where many of us still feel that things like Facebook are a kind of fad, a youth thing, maybe even a negative thing, whatever we feel. And yet the reality is that over 500 million people are connected with each other in a multidimensional way through Facebook. 500 million people makes Facebook almost the biggest country in the world. And therefore, the pace of change is so fast, the question will be raised to what extent the changes in social reality and social realia have an effect on the halacha. And again, this is controversial. We won't shy away from the controversy. We'll look a little bit today. Now, let's just warm ourselves up with some less controversial issues, where there have been more of a, if you like, objective change, which nobody's really going to debate, and no one's going to really question. Let me give you some fairly routine examples at the very beginning, and then maybe we'll skip and we'll make sure we have enough time to deal with all the really juicy stuff. Let's start with the beginning. A1, overturning the bed during Avelis. The Gemara says very clearly that there was a halacha that during the time of Avelis, the Avelim would take the bed that they normally slept on, and they'd turn it over on its side, on its front, so they wouldn't sleep comfortably, so that there would be a whole new reality during their week of Avelis. This is clear as a halacha, and yet, by the time of Tosfos already, they say, funny, it's always Tosfos that we end up starting with these things, but Tosfos, as we've seen, is not shy to turn around and say that things have changed. Here, there's a social issue, number one. It says the reason that we don't have kfiya samita, the turning over the bed, that our beds are kach cholin lishkoi benachas mitzadzeh, kamoi mitzadzeh. Our beds in his days, it won't make any difference if we turn it this way, if we turn it that way. It won't have any effect. Just the beds have changed. We now sleep on different beds, he says. The only karas hakfir, therefore, it makes no difference. It won't make any difference. It won't be noticeable. The Yeshlehen Dalad Kondisan, he describes what the beds were like in those days, and the changing of the bed, the turning over the bed, made a whole change in their social structure, and today, just not relevant. He says, we've changed our beds, and therefore we've changed our practice, and this halacha is, if you like, fallen into complete disuse, because socially we've adopted a different style of beds at night. Similarly, number two, the halacha is very clear in the Gemara, that before you daven, you must wear a belt. You must put on a belt. The reason for that is that she'ein aroya liba isa erva, there is a halacha that even if a person has clothing on, there must be some kind of separation between the upper half of the body, which contains if you like, the Kodesh functions, the head and the heart, etc., and the lower half of the body, which contains the more Gashmi functions, and therefore you have to wear a belt. Says Tosfos, again, number two, Mikan Shetarech La'azor Chaltav, Kishemitz Palel, and you have to put a belt on when you daven, he says, Uba Machzor Vitri, Mefarish Datam, and the Machzor Vitri, who is a student of Rashi, explains the reason is, Duba'ino Nazor, a reason we need a belt, Shiloye Liboroita Erva, so that the lower half does not see the upper half, or the other way around, the upper half does not see the lower half, as it were, not see, obviously it can't see, but it's not in direct contact, if you like. Said Tosis, V'dafka Lahen, this halacha only applied in those days, Shiloye Haya Lahem Michnasayim. They didn't have trousers or pants, if you insist. Okay. Therefore, they needed to put a belt on when they davened. Abaladidan, but us, sheyesh lanu avnet shel michnasayim. We have a waistband. We have a waistband in our trousers. Ein anetzrichim lazor. We don't need to wear a belt during davening. It's just the social change. The way people dress was different. In those days, they used to have long cloaks. They used to just be open, like a kind of nightgown type affair, and they just put a belt around it, and then that was the way that they dressed. Today we have divisions with underwear and overwear and all that kind of stuff, and therefore this halacha is no longer applicable for no other reason than just a social change. And again, not controversial. Everybody agreed with this. Another interesting... What's that? The gartel is a chumrah, based on certain Rishonim that don't necessarily agree with Tosfos, that hold there still is a need to wear a belt, and therefore the normative halacha is that a belt is not required if you wear clothing that we wear today. If you decide to dress up in a kind of North African outfit or whatever, then maybe la halacha, then you will have to start wearing a belt again, and that's fairly uncontroversial. A3 is a very interesting halacha. Look at A3. The Mishnah very clearly says, in source number 3, that there is a prohibition, Darabonon, in reading close by a light on Shabbos. You may have come across this. Says the Mishnah, it's a separate halacha. Taylor's not allowed to go with their needles out, tucked into his clothes near to dark. In case he forgets and goes out on Shabbos, and not a scribe with his pen tucked into his ear, whatever. You can't delouse the person or clothes, and you cannot read by the light of a candle. The Emes Omru, and they said, Hachozen Roye Heichan Tinokas Korin, the teacher is allowed to look where the children are reading. Aval Hu Lo Yikra, he is not allowed to read by the light of the candle. What is the reason he's not allowed to read by the light of the candle? Because the way they had, if you can imagine a lamp in those days that had a little flame, the way, if the flame was going out a little bit, the way you fixed it is you fiddled with the lamp and you fiddled with the flame and the flame got bigger. So somebody's reading close by the flame and can't see properly, so the first thing before he even knows what he's doing, he'll be fiddling with the flame. And therefore they made this halacha. In fact, not only did they make this halacha, but they said very clearly, number 4, Lo Yikra L'Orhana, says the Gemara, he can't read by a candle. Rabba said, Afila Gvoya Shtei Kamas, even if the light is 2 stories high, and explains Rashi, there's no chance that he's ever going to mess with it, because to mess with it, he'd have to get himself a ladder. He'd have to crawl up the ladder, and by the time he's done that, he's remembered already it's Shabbos. We're not worried about people deciding to be Mechalel Shabbos. If someone's going to decide to be Mechalel Shabbos, take a sheet if you don't have one, God forbid, then they're not going to listen to us anyway. We're worried about people breaking Shabbos by mistake. So even if it's 2 stories high, even though he's never going to fiddle with it, Kivan Degarta says Rashi, since they made a gzera, loy plug lemil tayhu. They didn't make distinctions. Loy plug is a very important principle in Darabon and halachas. When the rabbis made a halacha, they didn't want to make it applicable in different ways for different people in different circumstances, because if everybody thinks, well, that's for them, and this is for me, and that's for him, and that's for her, and that, then the whole thing will just fall apart through lack of interest. They therefore said, you know, you can't read by a light. That's finished. There's nothing to talk about. Even if the light's 20 feet in the air, you still can't read by a light. Because if we start talking about how high, then they'll say, well, that's not high. This is high, etc., etc., etc. What's that? Talking about in night time. Right, you go to sleep. You go to sleep, or you do something that doesn't require close work. You can use the Shabbos candles. In fact, on the contrary, you're obliged to use the Shabbos candles. But you use them in a more indirect way, for atmosphere, for general light in the room. You don't do close work close reading by the Shabbos camp. Comes along the modern Meforshim, okay? And I just brought you in number 5 already, Shulchan Aruch, before we get there. Ein Karin B'Sefel Or HaNer, says Shulchan Aruch, you can't read by a book, by the light of the candle. Afilo Einu Moitzi P'Piv, even if you're not speaking out loud. Shemi, in case you come to fiddle with the light. Afilo Hu Gavoya Esa Kaimus, even if it's 10 stories high, he's kind of gone, but even 8 stories higher than the Mishnah Gemara went. She'ena Yochel Yigalaz, and he can't reach it. Shaloi Chalku Chachamim B'Davar. They didn't make any distinctions in the matter. It is Osa either way. Comes along the Mishnah Brewery number 6 and says like this: Mikol Mokum, nevertheless, Nirali the Beneiros HaTovim Shalanu, our lights we have today. The Mishnah Brewery is writing 100 years ago. The whole halacha has just changed and disappeared. The Kulam, and everyone agrees on this, the Loi Shayach Shema Yate. It's just not Shayach anymore to say maybe you'll fiddle with the light. Rakbadava Shadar Kulahato. It's only with the lights that you fiddle with. The farming sometimes, Bechol, during the week. Kadesh Yidalek Yafet, so that it'll burn nicely. Ubener Stern, with these Stern lights, not exactly sure what they were, some kind of a central light fitting, whatever it was. The Ein Sarech Lahataya Klal La'olam, they don't need fiddling with, that's not how they work. There's no problem. It's the Oyrat Solu, it's a clear light, Ma'oid, but Ein Sarech Klal Bazeh. The Mishnah Brura just completely removes this entire halacha off the books, because he says the lights we have today, we've changed the style, we've changed the method, and similarly the Oruch HaShulchan says by the gas lamps that we had in his day. I remember when I was at school, I was a very old building, they still had all the gas lamps on the school, okay, at the sides of the walls. They didn't use them anymore, they had electricity. I wasn't at school 100 years ago, but I remember they still had the gas lamps on the wall, says the Oruch HaShulchan. With gas lamps, there's also no concern, because you can fiddle with a gas lamp all you like, and you can tap it and bang it. It won't change. All you'll do is break it. And therefore, he says, the entire halacha, even though Chazal said, loy plug, we don't make distinctions, if it's 2 stories high, 10 stories high, the entire thing simply doesn't apply, because society has changed the lights that we use, and therefore the halacha has just fallen into a complete oblivion. And therefore, there is today no problem at all reading close up by an electric light bulb, because there is no way of turning it up or down by tapping it or playing with it. Now, that's an interesting shaila. You want to say now, the thing is like this, the dimmer switch and the light are on 2 different sides of the room. And therefore, it's difficult to turn around and say, if the light's too low, you're going to walk over to the room and you're going to go like this. You disagree? So you raise an interesting question, which is that if there's an equivalent technological issue today that Chazal didn't have in those days, and therefore they didn't prohibit it because they didn't have it, should we now introduce new strictures based on the same principles? Let me give you an example. Chazal were worried that people in their homes would turn Shabbos into a weekday if they were allowed to ask non-Jews to do all the work for them on Shabbos. Because very quickly, Shabbos can just turn into, you know, time me this letter and turn on the lights and drive the car. And you can spend the whole Shabbos doing the same thing that you do on a Monday if you can ask yourself. But Chazal said you can't do it. The question is, now we have time switches. We can have everything on a time switch. We'll have the lights on a time switch, and we'll have the oven on a time switch, and we'll have the dishwasher on a time switch. We'll have everything on a time switch. We'll have the whole house set up so it works perfectly on automatic pilot. Should that be Osa for the same reason that Chazal said that asking non-Jews to do work for you is Osa? So came along Rav Moshe Feinstein and said, you know what? I don't like time switches. If time switches would have been around in the time of Chazal, then they for sure would have said the same thing as they said with non-Jews. And therefore he was quite machmer on time switches. The fact is, though, that Chazal didn't have time switches, and therefore they didn't prohibit them. And the mainstream sack is, it's not for us to now be frumer than they were, not frumer than they were, but try and get into their headspace and start making new drabbonons. We don't do that. I think the same is true with the dimmer switch. You may turn around and say, well, in principle, maybe it should be the same, but we don't create new halacha. It goes both ways. We don't create new halacha by getting rid of halachas that they made, usually, and we don't create new halacha by creating new halacha. So that's what we're trying to discuss here. In this particular situation, the new situation just removes entirely the need for that halacha. You want to replace it by an analogous case? That's a chiddush.
I think the electricity in general, I think, your question is that really Eish?
No, we pass in electricity for sure is Eish. A fluorescent light is a shiner, a filament light bulb, everybody agrees that there's an issa d'oraisa to turn the light bulb off. Fluorescence now is a whole shiner. Anyway, I'm not getting into the halachos of electricity on Shabbos, that's a whole different question. But I'm just showing you here that this completely... If you wish to use the candles for whatever reason, for close reading, the halacha will still for sure apply. Right. Yes, it does. Then the halacha would for sure apply. The halacha isn't disappeared. It's just that the social reality has changed. A few weeks ago in Haranoff, we had a big blackout about 2 hours before Shabbos. So I went down to the Mastan, I got out all the Chanukiahs, lit all the 9 candles on the Chanukiahs. We had an atmospheric Chanukiah, you know. Right. A classic example, of course, is Rav Moshe's Psak on Chalav Yisrael, which is also a change of halacha based in a change of societal reality. It's well known that Chazal made a prohibition, the Rabbonon, to drink milk, which was milked by non-Jewish people. The reason for that is very straightforward. It was, and still is in some parts of the world, very standard to mix milk from a treif animal with milk from a kosher animal, mix camel milk and pig's milk and whatever other kind of milk with the normal milk. Most people don't see any problem with it whatsoever. Indeed, if you go to Be'er Sheva, I'm reliably informed, you can get camel milk products. You can even buy a brand of ice cream called Gamalida, okay, which is a cross between Gamal and Glida, and people drink it. The Bedouins drink it all the time. So Chazal said, you know something, you have to have a Jew there just to make sure that there is no contamination of the milk, because obviously everything that comes out of a treif animal is itself treif. Says Rav Moshe, Lechem, Afshe Vadai Gazru Zeh Beminyan, even though Chazal for sure, says Rav Moshe, created this halacha Beminyan, i.e. with a quorum of the Sanhedrin, we saw that it has effect, it cannot be overruled now unless we have a greater Sanhedrin, which clearly we don't have. Kaven dimidina hayamuta, okay, ein lahoychiach mizeh she'osru akashe ein shum chashash eruv. We can't assume that they prohibited milk when there is no possibility of contamination. Kiven she'al elu she'yesh behem chashash eruv, hutzichu ligzor. They made the gezerah because there was a concern of contamination of the milk. And you cannot turn around and say loy plug. They didn't make any distinctions, like we said before. It's also. Because it's clear, said Rav Moshe, it's absolutely explicit that the gezerah, the rabbinic prohibition, was rak mitzad chashash eruv, was only because they were concerned with contamination. Because they only asked for the milk when a Jew wasn't watching. And therefore he says, very interestingly, that it's not like, what happens when a Jew watches a cow being milked? Does something magic happen to the milk? It becomes Yiddish milk? No, all that happens is when a Jew watches my cow being milked, I know that there's no contaminated non-kosher milk in there. I just know that because someone's checked it. So says Rav Moshe, so if I knew that before, so what do I need someone to watch the cow? It's the same thing. Chazal only made the gezerah in a case where there was a concern. And where there is no concern, there is no gezerah. It's straightforward enough. And therefore today, very famously, he said in America and in sort of Britain and places where they have very strong regimes of disciplinary procedures and supervision, etc. So there is no chashash, there's no concern in somewhere in milking the cows in Wisconsin. They're going to put a bit of camel milk or pig's milk or whatever other kind of milk, raccoon milk or whatever they have up there. They're not going to do that. They can't do that. And if they ever did that, then they would be out of business in, you know, 1, 2, 3. And therefore there is no need, says Rav Moshe, according to the din. He's not saying everybody should be lenient. He's saying maybe some people should still have Chalav Yisrael in many cases. But according to the basic halacha, he said that it is Chalav Yisrael. It's the same thing as if a Jew looked at it. It's no different. Yeah.
It's interesting.
In called what? Oh really? How interesting. Anyway, let's go on. I raise And therefore, it's very, very well known in America. Many people are somech on this Rav Moshe, and the e-products, OUD products, which obviously rely on this sack as well, which is obviously a very reliable heksher. Not that everybody eats under that heksher, but no one would suggest for 1 minute that it was treif. Yeah. Right, so now, so food technology is a complicated thing. All sorts of things get added in all sorts of ways. Leaving aside Rav Herschel Schechter's question as to whether any of the milk in America is kosher at all, because all the cows are treifers, or large numbers of them are all treifers, that's a separate shaila completely, which is very, very interesting. Okay, yes. Sorry, I can't hear you. Yes. No, we don't. No, no. The other one was also no. The other one was also a gezeira. We weren't discussing whether you're allowed to now create eish or not create eish on Shabbos. That wasn't the question. The question is, are you allowed to use the lights to read closely, which itself is a Darabonah, not a Doraisa? That's the question. Now, A5 I'm not getting into, but it's an interesting social question. Does a deaf mute count for a minyan? It's very clear that according to the basic halacha paskin in Chazal, a deaf mute does not count for a minyan at all, because they're not capable of interacting. We don't know exactly where they're understanding. They can't hear what's going on. They can't express their own das, and therefore they do not count for a minyan. Today there's a whole shaila. Maybe they do count for a minyan, because today we can communicate with deaf mute people in a very sophisticated way through other means that they simply didn't have of communication. What?
This is the switch, because up to now everything has been physical. Now this is
physical. Right. Now there's more of a social issue coming in, correct? Which we're going to deal with a little bit more. Deaf mutes now maybe will, says Rav Avadia Yosef, in some situations count towards a minyan for some purposes, because we are now able to communicate with people and we know exactly what they're thinking through other means. I'm not going to get into it in detail, but it's an interesting shaila. Let's skip A6. Raising goats in Eretz Yisrael is an interesting question, but that's also more of just a social reality. The Chazal were very clear, you're not allowed to have goats in Eretz Yisrael. Goats destroy the land, they chew up everything in sight, they eat all the grass, they leave the place looking like a desert, and therefore because of Yishuv Haaretz, in order to keep Israel beautiful, they made a prohibition, the Rabbanon, to have goats, to raise goats in Israel. The Meforshim, what's this? Yeah, they're fine, but the Avos didn't have the Rabbanon, so it came later. Yes, a deaf person who speaks was never a shaila. And a speaking person who couldn't hear was never a shaila. It was a deaf person who can't speak. The issue of raising goats is interesting, because the Shulchan Aruch turns around and says, actually we will look at it. He passes in Shulchan Aruch, you cannot raise goats in Eretz Yisrael. Because they pasture, basadoi shalacherim, in other people's land, zeikim matzoi, and they cause damage. You can't keep goats, you can't tell them off. If you can't keep them on leash, really. Aval Magadlim Basuria, you're allowed to raise them in Surya. I mean, Barisha Be'ez are in the Midbar. Maybe that's an answer for the Avos. They raise them in the Midbar. Okay, and there is a... You're right, let's not ask Kashas from the Avos. There is a whole shaila of the Avos. Kept the Torah. How did the Avos keep the Torah? It said, Vaha'edna, he says, today, She'ein Motu She'eli Yisrael, but Eretz Yisrael Sadois, the Jews don't own land in Eretz Yisrael. Nira Deshari, it's allowed. And again, simply a social change. The Jews in the time of the Shulchan Aruch did not own land in Eretz Israel. In many cases, they weren't allowed to. There certainly weren't many Jews living here in the 1500s. Today, and therefore he says the Chazal Halacha is flipped on its head. Today, it's quite possible it's flipped on its head again, because now large parts of Eretz Israel are owned by Jews. And you see that the social reality changes. This is a straightforward... What's this?
Goats, cheeses, and things like that. It's a very big industry.
That's true. The question is whether you should have goats roaming freely around the land. I think you can ask a shaila if you're planning on raising a goat farm in Harnov. You can ask one of the local Gedolei Hapoiskim what the situation is. Yes. Right, but they kept them in the Midbar. that kept them in the Midbar. They didn't let them roam around the fields because they do cause damage. Anyway, let's go on. What I'd like to do is maybe we'll go back to B and C at the end because I don't want to run out of time for D. So far, everything's been really very straightforward. No one's going to get too excited about goats or even about milk. However, there are other much more fundamental shifts in social reality that may have a massive impact on halacha. And there are, and we will look at this in more detail in the coming shiurim, there are groups of people, certainly more on the left wing of the modern Orthodox world, who are pushing quite strongly for certain changes to be made, for the ordination of women rabbis, for women's aliyahs, things like that. These are big issues. They certainly cannot be ignored. And we have to understand how the halakhic systems work in these areas too. What we're going to be seeing as a pattern, hopefully, not just today but over the next few sessions, is that the technical specific details in a certain area of halakha is not the entire picture. There are meta-halakhic or bigger, even hashkafic principles that have to be brought into the consideration before you turn around and say, can we do this, can we change that? Sometimes you'll be able to identify permission or heterim within the strict halacha. How we apply those heterim is a much bigger question, which we will deal with. Let's start off the ball rolling with looking at the issue of non-Jewish people. The Gemara Paskens, the Shor, number 21, Shor shall hegde, Shor shall Yisrael, Shenagach, Shor shall Oved Kachavim. If a Jewish person's ox damages a non-Jewish person's ox, patur, they do not have to pay for the damage. But if a non-Jewish person's ox damages a Jewish person's ox, mishalem nezek shalem, he has to pay full damage. Now, why that is a complicated business. Exactly why it is that there seems to be a disparity in halacha. If we damage them, we're off the hook. If they damage us, they have to pay. The Gemara goes through a whole discussion as to in what circumstances that applies, how that applies, when that applies, etc., etc. I'm not interested in that particular halacha for now. By the way, just as an aside, the Gemara there relates that the Roman authorities sent two inspectors to check what's in the Torah and to see if the Romans would agree with everything that's in the Torah. The Gemara relates this episode. They came, they asked the rabbis to teach them Torah. The rabbis taught them the whole Torah. At the end of that procedure, they turned around to the rabbis and said, we think your Torah is fantastic. It's wonderful. We like it very much. There's just one halacha that's really offensive, and that's this one. And it says, how can it be that if we damage you, we're liable, and if you damage us, you're exempt? We think that's outrageous. However, because we like you so much and the rest of the Torah is so wonderful, we won't tell on you. We'll keep it one shtum. So the Yamshel Shlomo, this has got nothing to do with the subject we're dealing with, but I can't resist telling you, the Yamshel Shlomo asked a very obvious question, the Marashal in the 1500s. Why could they not just have missed this halacha out? Couldn't they just brush over this? Couldn't they lie? Couldn't they change it? They could have started a pogrom. They could have started a revolution. They could have started all sorts of things. He says, you see from here that you cannot lie to people about Torah, even if you think that they're going to be upset by what they're about to hear. Lying about Torah is something which is absolutely off, out of the question. And I remember when Rav Mordechai Becher, who is a very interesting fellow, well worth listening to, gives shiurim about Kiruv and how Kiruv is done. He starts with this Gemara and this Yamshel Shlomo and says, whatever you're going to do when you're doing Kiruv, you can't lie to make people frum. That's unacceptable. Now, there are ways to put things and there are ways to explain things, but lying is not an option. They learn it from this. It's a very interesting question, but nothing to do with what we're doing. The Me'iri, which is back on the track of what we're doing, the Me'iri very famously makes the following comment in number 22 on this Gemara. The Fima Shenem of a Gemara, what it says in the Gemara, Dafka ba'amamim she'enem gedurim b'darchi dasos v'nimusim, is only talking about people, non-Jews, who are not guided by the rule of law, let's say. Datot, by rules. V'nimusim, what's nimusim? Politeness, civilization, they're uncivilized people. Aval kol she'sheva mitzvahs b'yadam, but if we have non-Jews that keep the seven mitzvahs, dinam etzleinu, kedinenu etzlam, that we have exactly the same halacha, The ein noisim panim ledin la'atzmein, and we do not favor ourselves in the halacha. U'me'ata ein sarich loyma shekein ba'umas hagduros b'darchi dasas v'nimbus. It goes without saying the people that lived in his day, he's already 700 years ago, the non-Jews of Chazal are not the same, he says, as the non-Jews of today. And therefore, maybe everything that Chazal have to say about non-Jews in certain areas just doesn't apply anymore to him. Now, the question is to whether this Meiri was taken on by the mainstream rabbinic establishment. This is a great one for interfaith work, you know. It's a great one for having, you know, giving a Dvar Torah to the local bishop who is coming to visit, because you can turn around and say, well, look, you know, today we're all on the same page. It's only in the days when the non-Jews were uncivilized, that's what the Gemara is talking about. The truth of the matter is that most rabbis have not taken this perspective, and therefore most people still relate to non-Jews, certainly in principle, the way that the Gemara relates to non-Jews. However, the Meiri didn't. Others also didn't. The Maharal had a position on this. Rav Kook, very famously, says in number 23, She'ikahu kedasa Meiri. He says, I hold that the actual psak is like the Meiri. She'kol amim shehem gedurim v'minimusim hagunim. Any nation which is guided by civilized principles, bein adam lechavero, hein kfar nechshavim legerim toshavim, is called a ger toshav, b'chol chivu adam, in terms of all the halachas. The ger toshav was a principle which said that a non-Jew was allowed, if they were civilized and they kept the basic Sheva Mitzvahs, B'nei Noach, they were allowed to live amongst us and deal with us, and the halacha with them is very much an equal one in many ways as between Jews and Jews. And therefore, Rav Kook very clearly says that he felt that the Meiri's approach was the correct approach. He acknowledges, V'amnam gam im nema kapashtam shal poiskim acherim. The other poiskim go more with the basic... Arabs would definitely apply here. And now, Arabs, there is a separate issue with Arabs, which is nothing to do with halacha of this kind, which is that we're in a state of war with them. You know, we're actually in a military fight with people. And obviously, the way you treat people in an active military engagement has to be a little bit different than the way you treat people in a total non-military engagement. And therefore, that has to obviously be borne in mind. No one's pretending that everyone loves each other. But in principle, if leaving aside the issue of who's trying to attack us in a military way, this would apply completely. The Arabs don't have the rule of law. They have the rule of law. They're not uncivilized barbarians running around destroying property. Except, okay, leaving aside the issue that there is always no war between us. British people also weren't uncivilized barbarians, but they bombed Germany to pieces. That was entirely part of the war situation. It doesn't mean that the British are completely uncivilized, or the Americans who bombed Hiroshima. There are rules of war, there are rules of peace. I'm not trying to suggest that that we should all pretend that everyone loves each other.
The Arabs are the one towards the other, forgetting about the Arabs towards the Jews. Even one towards the other, they're uncivilized.
They have no laws? It's the rule of the streets? I don't think so. I don't think so. Anyway, look. We have to be careful. We have to be careful about polemics and politics. This is not the situation for that. You have to get a professor of Islamic study. What is the Islamic law on this, down the other, and do they follow it? Okay. I wouldn't have thought the Crusader Christians were that amazing either, but the Meiri obviously feels that they were different from the people that lived 1,000 years before. Leave that aside. The question of how to deal with non-Jews today is a very tricky one, and the question is, do we follow this Meiri, which is a total shift in social reality, which leads to a total shift in the way that Jews and non-Jews relate to each other. And again, in the interfaith world, this Meiri is kind of flavor of the month in a very, very strong way. Obviously, it changes the whole dynamic. Yes?
The point is, there's an issue of Shalom Lubavitch. If you're living in France or somewhere, and you're going to rip off on
That's a separate issue. Shalom and Darche Shalom and Ava is not really what the Meiri is talking about. Everybody agrees that in terms of practical preservation of the Jewish community, we have to at least put on some kind of a friendly exterior. We have to deal in a civilized way with people. But that's not because we hold in principle that now these people and us are on the same kind of halachic playing field. It's because we just don't want a pogrom to start. It's a different approach. The Meir is saying much more than Darchi Shalom. He's saying that in principle, the whole concept of Jewish non-Jewish relations has changed today.
The concept that people feel they can rip off a government or taxes.
Excuse me,
against Jews.
But that comes because, that comes to a large degree because the Jewish people were discriminated against so much over the last 1,000 years by different governments and different authorities. The only way they could survive in many situations was by kind of trying to slip between the... The question is whether that's changed or not, but that's a separate issue. I'm not getting into that now. Turn to page 5, please. What about non-religious Jews? This is even more tricky. If you look here in number 24, Tani Rebbe Abao Kameda Rebbe Yochanan, Ha'oiv de Kochavim, V'roi Beheim Adaka, we get back to our goat herders again, idol worshippers and goat herders were assumed to be unscrupulous people who stole other people's property because of the goats. Loi malim v'loi meiridin. The halacha is if they fell in the lake, we don't have an obligation to fish them out. But loi meiridin, we don't push them in. That's different. Aval, however, says the Gemara, haminim, heretics, Hamasoiros, people who are moisterim, who are moister the Jewish people, who hand over the Jewish people to the non-Jewish authorities. V'hamumarim, those people who've rebelled against Judaism. Hayu moiridim, not only v'loy ma'alim, not only do you not fish them out, but if you can nudge them in, that's even a bigger mitzvah. Now, what's going on here? Who are these mumrim? So it's very clear in halacha. Mumrim include people like mechalalei Shabbos, those people who publicly break Shabbos, those people who publicly live a secular life, those etc. etc. There are many examples of the Chazal classed as a mummer. Now the shaila is, what's today? You know, 1,000 years ago, someone who was a public Shabbos breaker had made a conscious public decision to break from the community and to become Christian effectively. There was no middle ground, there were no secular people. And therefore that person has now placed themselves clearly and unequivocally outside the Jewish community. Today, for the last already 200 years, that is clearly not the case. There are millions upon millions of Jewish people who are totally non-religious for no other reason that they never had any education, they're not making any statement of any kind, and they're certainly not rebelling against anybody, but they still break Shabbos publicly. And maybe they even know that they break. They know that people don't drive on Shabbos sometimes, and they say, "Well, we don't do that. Whatever, that's their laws. We don't keep that anymore." How does one designate? How does one categorize that group of people? And this is a massive shaila in halacha. In many areas, do you give people aliyahs when they come to shul on Shabbos if they drove to shul? Or do you turn around and say, I'm sorry, you're publicly a Shabbos breaker. You can't expect a public kavod in the shul. Do we allow kohenim, tzeduchim, if they are not religious, if they're chilonim, if they are mechalalei Torah, mitzvahs, etc.?
What if they keep, this is probably not theoretical, what if they keep all these mitzvot, but they're married, say, to a non-Jew, or a woman who hasn't converted?
That's also relevant. 100 years ago, even when people didn't keep Shabbos, marrying out was considered to be a major break with the Jewish religion. Even 50 years ago. Today it's not. Today people honestly, honestest, don't actually understand why there should even be an issue with them marrying out. What could possibly be the problem with that? This question is an ongoing and dynamic question and changes. There was a time when non-religious people may not have kept Shabbos, but they wouldn't get themselves tattooed. Tattooing was considered to be a terrible, goyish thing. That's not the case today. Your standard non-religious Jewish kids around America will tattoo themselves just as much as anybody else. Here also. And the question is, do we change the way halacha works in response to that? And the truth is, this has been a big issue. There are communities in which the shuls do give aliyahs to people who are mechalalei Shabbos. They do ask the kohenim to duchen, even though in other communities they really won't do that. And there is no clear approach to this. Certainly in the world of Kirov, the approach that's generally speaking taken is that these people are shogegim. They are doing things, quote unquote, by accident, simply because they don't have the education to have made a statement to say, I'm doing it on purpose. And that has ramifications for other areas. If a non-religious Jew breaks Shabbos and makes something for you on Shabbos, can you eat it? That's an interesting question. You know, if they did it on purpose, if they did it by accident, can you invite people to come to your programs if they're going to drive on Shabbos? What is their status of their Shabbos breaking? This is a very interesting question. And again, I could give a whole class on this, but I'm not going to right now. because, but I'm just quoting it as an example where the halacha is really going to change for no other reason than social change, depending on who you ask. I brought this very interesting one from... That's called a change. It was quite clear. You took a snapshot of someone 700 years ago and said, you asked a Shai Lever rabbi. I have a next door neighbor who doesn't believe in God, doesn't keep Shabbos, doesn't keep kosher, lives an entirely secular life. Is he or is he not a heretic? There's nothing to talk about. He doesn't believe in any of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. He doesn't believe in Mashiach. He doesn't believe in Torah. He doesn't believe in anything. Today, you have the same person living next door to you, and they're not an apikoros. There are some people who are still apikorosim, but there are very few of them, and you won't find them very often. I have an interesting story how I ended up in a minyan with one once, but that's not for now. Walking behind a woman very clearly in Shulchan Aruch. Let's get more into women's issues now. Okay? We have 35 minutes and we'll need them. Paga isha b'shuk. Says the Shulchan Aruch, if you came across a woman in the shuk, in the street, asala alecha chareha, there's a halachic prohibition to walk behind a woman in the street. El arat, you have to run away, umasakil, stand into the side, or la achrov, or behind, like in a different way. You cannot, if a woman walks out in front of you in the street, la halacha, the Shulchan Aruch, you cannot walk, continue walking behind them. Can't. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, it's nothing to do with covered, and nothing to do with sneers. It's to do with whether the guy is going to be affected and stare at the woman in an inappropriate way. It's not her halacha. She doesn't even know he's there. It's nothing to do with covered. It's to do with, we're worried that he's gonna get into a situation where he's not gonna be thinking appropriate things. Number 26. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Kimitzada Svara. The language of the Shulchan Aruch, it seems to me, in Evan Ha'ezer, which we've just quoted, say it says, Ipaga, if it happens to be you come across Isha Bashuk, a woman in the street, Mashma, this implies that Ein Darkan Shal Nashim Liyos B'Shvakim, that it was unusual, that you'd have all of a sudden come across a woman in the street. Barakah Derech Mikra, Paga, you suddenly came across a woman. Ukiyadua Delifnim Haya Darkan Shal Nashim Tsanuas, it used to be the way that women who were Tsanua, Lihios Babayas, they stay in the house. It's quite clear. 500 years ago, there's nothing to talk about. Kedich Siv Kol Kvoida Bas Melech Pnima. Fine. Just skip the brackets for now. Ulechein, Keshehoylech Keneged Isha. And therefore, when you're walking in front of a woman in those days, Ein Achashash Godel, there's not much of a concern that you'll be, to look at her inappropriately. Ki Yitzvayesh Lehistakelba, that he'll be embarrassed to look at her. Okay? She'll feel that he's staring at her. But when you're walking behind the woman, he's giving the understanding of the halacha. He can see her. Okay, no one can see him seeing her. We're very worried about what he's going to do. And it's clear that in those days, there was something he could do about it. If he found himself behind a woman, he could run away. Now he comes and says today, Masha ain came bizmanenu. The truth is today, Hari af im yivrach. Even if he runs away, ma'achayre isha from this woman, yimsa takeup. He will immediately find himself. It's asma yachro isha acheres. You're walking in Canyon Malcha. You find yourself behind a woman. Which way are you going to run? There is nowhere to run. Ukamaduma. Now they said there are more women out in the streets than men. And by the way, he's not suggesting that it's not sanua for a woman to be out of the street today. It's clear that the norms and minhagim of tzniut have changed. It's not considered to be inappropriate for a woman just to go to the shops and get in the street. That's clearly not the case. So he says, now you can't avoid it. Now there are more women in the street than men. There's so much priestess around today. There's so many women who are not dressed properly in the street. There's now more people who are dressed poorly than people who are dressed well. Now, not only are the women dressed like this, but we said before in the halach, if a man was facing a woman, he'd be too embarrassed to stare at her. So now he's not even embarrassed to stare at her. So there's no concern that there's going to be any difference. Therefore, in a situation of a mitzvah, or should tarach la'asos kemitzad ani musa, or if it's going to be embarrassing to the person involved, ain't tam lahachmi bezmanena. There's no reason anymore to be machmi with this. But this is a clear Shulchan Aruch halacha. There's no debate. There's no machloikas on this. He just turns around and says the whole social basis for the halacha, all the assumptions of the halacha. A, that women would be very rarely seen. B, that you could run away somewhere else. C, that no one would have the chutzpah to stare at a woman inappropriately in front of her. All of these things no longer apply. There are women all over the streets, and people can't run away anywhere, and people now don't care if they stare at people, even whatever they do, and therefore he says this, the whole thing is just perhaps not relevant. He does say, I must confess, maybe my English line is slightly misleading. He doesn't say it no longer applies. He says that in a mokum mitzvah or in a situation of embarrassment, there's no reason to be machmer. Maybe he says it still applies, but it doesn't apply certainly in the way that it used to do. Getting into perhaps even more dangerous waters, Chazal makes certain statements about women, which I'm not even going to go into what they mean, but the question is, do they still apply? For example, famous 27, Tana de Be'eliyahu, Hoyel the Nashim Dasan Kalois Aleihem. Women have a Das Kala. Have a light das. What does that mean? What is it? Does that mean that women were not intellectually gifted? Does that mean that women were not educated? Does that mean women have different characters? Without getting into the entire debate as to what that means, one can ask the question, when they talk about women, does that apply to today's women? Is the social milieu that people are educated in today so different from what was then that people are in an entirely different mindset today? Women are educated exactly the same way as men. And this is a question which I'm not going to answer. I'm just going to raise, and my Rosh Hashivas have raised this question as well. Can you anymore say that the same things that were said about women 2,000 years ago are exactly the same today? And we see in some areas clearly that they're not. And the obvious area that they're not is in women's learning. The Rambam makes very clear statements based on the Mishnah and other Chazals. He says in number 28, Isha she lamda Torah yesh la schar. If a woman learns Torah, she has a schar. Ve'afal pi she yesh la schar. Even though she has a schar, tzivu chachamim, the chachamim commanded, she lo yilmad Adam es bitoy Torah. A person should never teach his daughter Torah. Mipnei she roiv nashim ein dasan l'chuvanas lehislameid. Because women simply do not have, most women, he says, most women do not have the wherewithal to learn. They will transform the words of Torah into words of nonsense. Because of their poverty of intellect. Amru Chachamim, the Chachamim said, Kolam alamed es bitay Torah, keilu lamda tiflus. If you teach your daughter Torah, it's as if you taught her nonsense, meaning she simply will not understand and take what you taught her and use it productively. She will just take it and twist it and turn it into something which is more damaging than if you'd never taught her anything at all. Now, again, I'm not getting into the entire debate as to how that works. Safe to say that clearly over the last 100 years, there's been a total shift in approach in the entire Jewish world, maybe with the exception of the extreme Hasidic sort of sect of the world, of the sector of the world, but certainly in the mainstream Haredi sector, the Beis Yaakov world has taken over the mindset, and goes without saying in the modern Orthodox world, in the religious Zionist world, women are now routinely educated to a very, very high level in Torah. Whether you teach them Gemara, whether you don't teach them Gemara, is almost a side issue. The fact remains that people are being educated in a radically different way than they were 100 years ago. And Shara Shneira obviously is responsible for that. It's your time, round about now. When is it? Next week. She went to all of the leading Gedolim, and almost every single one of them told her she was nuts and she must not do it. The two that supported her were the Chofetz Chaim and the Gera Rebbe. Everybody else thought it was outrageous. Don't let's turn around and say that all the Gedolim thought this was a wonderful idea. They did not.
But they came around.
Later. That's true. Oh, so look now in number 29. Why did this change? So a very interesting tshuva of the Moznaim Lemishpat, who is Rav Zalman Sorotskin, says like this: Avaloike yamim rishonim hayamim achronim. The earlier days cannot be compared with today, he says. But yamim rishonim hisnagu bati Yisrael al pi shulchan aruch. A Jewish home used to be run according to Shulchan Aruch. Be'er shahaya lil moed behem. You could learn in a Jewish home. It's kol ha'tayra. Me'ani time from just experience. You could be brought up in a Jewish home and not need a formal education. A girl would absorb the Yiddishkeit and the Torah from the home. And me'mele lo yihaya tzarech lil moed, l'lamed rather, es b'nois Yisrael, Torah min ha'sefer. Yeah, there was no need for a formal educational process. But now, through our Averis, you cannot expect Torah home to teach girls. This doesn't work that way. And look at what he says now, in the second paragraph. Someone who doesn't teach their daughter Torah, Yehudi Makairi, Shisimu Katris, Bifnei Hashpas Harachov, that now would serve as a shield against the influence of the street. Harihu malamda mimela es oisa tiflus. Now if you don't teach your daughter Torah, it's as if you taught her tiflus. Because you've exposed her to the whole world without any kind of mechanism to try and deal with that. Vamimela ata et chayrachov. And she'll come to the street. Meaning, it's very interesting, the whole principle of Chazal has been turned on its head. Now, it used to be that if you taught women Torah, Chazal were worried you were teaching them tiflus. Now, if you don't teach women Torah, it's as if you're teaching them syphilis. And indeed, there has been a wholesale shift in the entire role of teaching women. It's completely changed. And what's this? Every Beis Yaakov in the world works on this principle. He's saying nothing more than if we don't teach women Torah, they will just drift off into, and this was happening in the 1920s, and this is why Sarah Shneira started Beit Yaakov, because the women, the boys were in yeshiva, the girls were in gymnasium, in university, the women were being educated as chemists, as biologists, as social everything, and they had no connection with Torah, therefore they just regarded Torah as being primitive and unsophisticated, because the only Torah they ever knew was primitive and unsophisticated. Sarah Shneira therefore said they have to be taught commensurate with their education, which is exactly why Rav Soloveitchik later said that now, by the 1950s and 60s, commensurate with their education means they have to be taught Talmud. They have to be taught Gemara. Now, you can debate this and argue this, but it's really the same question. There's nothing magic about teaching Gemara to women that makes it a whole different thing than teaching anything else to them. It's all part of the same question. Is teaching necessary in order to keep people focused and understood and connected to Judaism? And this is an ongoing issue. Maybe I'll just skip. I'm going to go back. But the same issue is bat mitzvah, except it's a little bit less agreed upon. Bat mitzvah was a relatively recent innovation, which was no question was first brought in by the Reform movement. The celebration of a girl's coming of age, which for various reasons they changed to 13, which is obviously not correct. But at 12 years old, you celebrate with a bat mitzvah. And there were those people who, whilst they supported learning Torah or teaching Torah to women, were very, at least parav, if not negative, about bat mitzvah. However, the Shridi Eish... Yes, no question about it. And
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. I'm sorry.
Whether it's Solomon Schechter or Mordechai Kaplan, it's all coming from the same Gisha. So look at the Shride Eish. Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, who was one of the Gedolim in originally Lithuania, and then Germany before the war, and then in Switzerland after the war, he said like this. 35. Yesh toinim neged ha-heta shel chagigas ha-bar mitzvah. There are those people who oppose the permission of bar mitzvahs, mishum shehu neged minhag hadoros hakodmim. It goes against previous generations. Shaloi nagu minhag zeh, they never had this custom. Aval be'emes ein zu taina, this is not a legitimate complaint. Ki bedorish lefneinu loi hitzaruchu lasak b'chinuch habanos. It's the same idea as Rav Zalman Sorotskin. You cannot bring examples of how women were educated or whether they had bar mitzvahs 100 years ago. There was a whole different situation, social situation then. Aval achshav Nishtanu hadoira shinui otsum. There's a kind of a little bit of a hint of nishtane hateva there. But not in a physical sense, but nishtanu hadoiras. Hashbas harachayv, he says the same thing, the influence of the street. Oikrois meleid kol narva naira kol zikshel yahadus. It uproots from the hearts and minds of the Jewish children all Judaism. V'habonos mischanchos b'batei sefer nochrim. The girls are educated in non-Jewish schools, or batei sefer chiloinim, or non-religious schools. She'enem shoytim lahashrish b'leiv talmideihim. They're not interested in instilling in the hearts and minds of their students. Ava l'Torah. Torah Yisrael or Liminhagi Hakadosh Shel Hayados Hashlema. They're not interested. The actual Mutal Aleinu Rakeiz Koychesenu. We have now to focus on our energies Bechinuch Shel Banos on Jewish girls' education. Look at what he says now. V'shuras Hahegyon, and it makes perfect sense. He says Hayasha, common sense. V'chayvus Haikaron Hapid Hapedagogi B'chayev, and the very nature of education of pedagogy. Of education methodology requires kimat lachug gam lebas es hagos lechiyav mitzvah to celebrate a bat mitzvah. It's no longer, he says, an option. You're obliged to give girls a bat mitzvah. The hafliga zu, and this distinction that we make she'oisim bein bonim lebonas, between men and women, benogei lechagigas habagrut, celebrating their growing up, poigas kasher beregish ha'enosh shel habas habageres, is going to be very hurtful to a young girl. Asher b'shtachim acherim, where in other areas of life, kfar zachta b'zikaron emancipatia, she feels emancipated in other areas of her life, and yet when it comes to her celebration of her Jewish coming of age, for her brother we make a bar mitzvah, and for her we say, nunu. Says the Sridei Eish, that's totally unacceptable, and anyone who's tuned into educational reality will realize that this is a major, major error. That Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sridei Eish, one of the great, original Lithuanian Gedolim, who became very much part of the German Jewish world before the war, and survived the Holocaust through various different means, and you know, you would have thought this comes from some kind of Lahavdil reform. Not at all. It's changing slowly. It's changing. I think in certain parts of the Orthodox world, bat mitzvah is standard. In other parts, it's not so standard. But I think it's dynamic. I think there's a movement. He's saying ignore it at your peril. Yes. Yes.
In our circle, the party is like, that's not the issue. What do you do for a girl? You make her a party.
You make her a party. So he goes on in the tshuva to say you give her a public dress presentation, you give her a drosha, you say we welcome you to the community. Well, that's very interesting, because if you analyze it, the truth is, what changes when she turns 12, her entire religious life changes totally. All the mitzvahs that she wasn't obligated in, she's now obligated in. The aliyah for the Torah for the boy is actually a very minor, almost token gesture that he's now a godel, as it were. The reality is that he's now... So that's Rav Moshe says this. It has a tangible public expression, whereas with girls it perhaps doesn't. We talked about this last Elul, and I'm therefore not going to go into it more now. But it's definitely, this is my guess, the bat mitzvah is somewhere lagging behind Talmud Torah in this issue, and I think that you will find, though, over the next 50 years, that it may change depending on how it works. I can't say, I'm not a prophet, but I need to go on, because I can't leave you hanging with some of these other issues. Turn over to page 6. Oh, are we? Oh, yes. So go to page seven, and let's look at a couple of these issues. What about women saying Kaddish? Oh, so. Okay, so the question is, what is the status of women saying Kaddish? Now, obviously, everyone agrees that in order to say Kaddish, you need a minyan, and a minyan can only be 10 adult males. There's no shaila about that. The question is, if there are 10 adult males present, should or may a woman stand up and say Kaddish from the mechitza, behind the mechitza, etc., etc.? Has the social reality changed? It used to be women just didn't come to shul. There wasn't even a shaila. They didn't even have an Ezra's Noshim 300 years ago in most shuls. Now women come to shul, that's standard. Is this also something that is going to change? Now, I think this is very unusual in most Orthodox shuls that women do say Kaddish. But I just brought you an interesting three lines from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, who says the following. Today, when Jews are battling over equality between men and women with respect to such matters as Aliyot, which we're going to deal with right now, if Orthodox rabbis bar women from saying Kaddish, despite the possibility of permitting it, the influence of Reform and Conservative rabbis will thereby be strengthened. Accordingly, it is forbidden to bar women from saying Kaddish. It is forbidden to say to a woman, he says, that she's not allowed to say Kaddish. Because he feels that that's just going to strengthen the hands of other people who are fighting against us. And it's not a fight that we need to have, he said, because halachically it's not really such a big issue. Why exactly is it an issue, he said? What's the problem here? Kol Isha. So can a woman bench goyim more? So we're going to see in a minute a tshuva of Rav Avadia Yosef about a woman benching gomel. And we'll see where that is. But is there, what exactly is the difference between a woman benching gomel and a woman saying Kaddish? Now, of course, there is a difference. It feels different. And therefore, that's why next week we're going to have to deal with more meta-halachic issues and work out even where there is a halachic opening, is that an opening that we should be crawling through? Or is that an opening that we should be shutting down? And that's a very interesting question. You have the infamous words, you know, where there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way, which is not the way that halacha works. That is not the way that halacha works. And therefore, we have to work out where we can make changes, well, whilst at the same time not destroying the whole process. There's lots of people who will help us destroy the edifice of halacha. They won't be interested in putting it back together again. Dealing with the issue of aliyahs, let's talk about that now, because that's very interesting. There are groups of people pushing for this issue of women's aliyahs. And this really goes to the issue of changes of social reality. Why can a woman not have an aliyah? And again, I'm not getting into all of these in great detail because we could have a separate class on every single one of them. But why is it that a woman is not called up for an aliyah? What exactly is the problem here? Oh, so look at number 37. Tan Rabbanan, Hakol Oyli Leminyan Shiva. The Gemara says everybody counts for the seven aliyahs on Shabbos. Everyone can be called up. Afilu Kotten, even if they're under bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah. Afilu Isha, also women. The Gemara makes a statement, women can be called up for aliyahs on Shabbos. Aval, Amru Chachamim. However, the Chachamim did say, Isha Loi Tikra B'Torah, a woman should not read from the Torah, Lifnei Kovod Tzibur, because of Kovod of the Tzibur. You have to remember that in those days, aliyah meant not only you're called up to make a bracha, but you're called up to actually read from the Torah. You actually read from the Torah. What does Kovod Tzibur mean? It's not dignified for the community to have a woman saying an aliyah or saying reading from the Torah. Well, why not? So one issue which is raised is it's a public disgrace because you cannot find men who are capable of reading, who are obliged to be reading, and therefore the only thing you can do is to find women. So what happens if there are men who can read, and that doesn't apply? It's just that they choose. So they want to call up a woman for an aliyah. What do we do with Kovod Tzibur there? So have a look in number 38. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Hakol Oyli Leminyan Shiva Afilu Isha, that everyone counts towards the seven aliyahs of Shabbos, you can even call up a woman. Aval, says the Shulchan Aruch, Amru Chachamim Isha Lo Tikra B'Tzibur Nitnei Kovod HaTzibur. And then the Ramah goes on to say, Ve'elu Dafka Mitztarfim Leminyan HaKroyim Aval Loisha Yu Kulam Nashim Oktanim. Interestingly, he's still talking about the old position where women could be called up, and he says, but it was never allowed to call up all seven of women or children, only a few of them. The question is, why is he still dealing with that? That's like, we don't do that anymore because of Kovod Tzibur. The halacha is finished, no? He said originally they could call up women, and now you can't call up women. So the Ramah in the 15th century, 16th century is saying, but even if you could call up women, you can't call up all of them women. It raises the interesting question as to exactly how this halacha works. Look in the Aruch HaShulchan number 39. Yerushalmi de Megillah, he said, De Eved Oyle Leminyan Shiva, an Eved, a slave, can be called up for one of the seven aliyahs. Ein Sham, look there. Because of Rabbeinu HaRamah, the Dino Ke'isha, that he has the same din for this halacha as an Isha, which is what? Shelechat Chila Loyale Mifnei Kovod HaTzibur. Now that's a very interesting word. Lechat Chila, she shouldn't be called up because of Kovod HaTzibur. Now, the word l'chadchila implies a b'di'evet. And what is the b'di'evet? And it's interesting, if you look, there's a Tosefta that has a slightly different wording. The Tosefta is from the same time as the Mishnah, number 14. Hakol oilin aminyan shiva afilu isha afilu cotton. The ein may be in esa isha likrois larabin, but you mustn't bring up a woman to read in public. He doesn't talk about covered sibyl there. And the Chastei David is very interesting, which is one of the Perushim on the Tosefta. It's on the standard print of the Tosefta. He says, what does it mean you shouldn't call up a woman? He says that if a woman came up on her own to read, then you don't send her down again. She can certainly read, because that's the b'di'evet. Look at what he says. And this is the halacha l'maisa. I'm not paskening halacha, chas v'chalila. I'm just saying that they're trying to understand what this lechatchila b'di'evet is. So look in the first line at the end of that. Near the al koponim im alsa, if she comes up, loiteiru, she shouldn't go down. Hoylu midina, since according to the basic halacha, oyle le minyan, she does count towards the minyan, meaning doesn't mean the minyan of 10 men, it means the minyan of 7 aliyahs. And he brings it, it's mashma that way, it implied that way in the Tosefta. The Rav Avadya Yosef quotes that Chastei David and says that what he's talking about, it's very interesting, he's talking about benching goymel. And he says a woman is allowed to bench goymel in public, and this is the minhag in Israel, very much. Even in very frum circles, the woman stands behind the chitzo, she comes into the side of the room, she benches goymel, and the guys answer. The Rav Avadya wants to bring a support from this particular halacha of the Chastei David. Look at what he says in the third line. Ubal korchach loima shehitiru leisha. They allowed women likrois betziva to read in the community, because she'ein shiva bakiim likrois. If there aren't 7 other people who are capable of reading, mishum shebemokam hashra shchina loichash shuchachamim lehiru. Because we're not worried about inappropriate thoughts in a shul where women are getting called up for an aliyah. It's not the same as walking in the shuk, where we are concerned about it. And again, Rav Avadya is not paskening that you can call up women. Don't think that he is. But he's basically understanding this b'di'evet l'chatchila, in the absence of men, maybe there would have been a situation where they could call up women. And it's explicit, it's very interesting. If you look in number 43, and again, I'm not telling you what the halacha should be, I'm just giving you a bit of a background. If you look at number 43, this is a fascinating tshuva of the Maharam of Rottenburg. The Maharam of Rottenburg is writing 700 years ago in Central Europe, and he says like this: Ir shekula kohanim. If a city has only kohanim, the ein ba afilu Yisrael echad. There's not even one non-kohen. They're all kohanim. It's a little kohen city. Nearly the kohen kohre pa'amayim. You have to call up a kohen, and then you can't call a different kohen, because that will be a pagam for the first kohen. What happens if there's no Levi? You call the first Kohen up twice. So the first Kohen gets called up once, and then twice. Veshub, and after that, Yikru Nashim, then you call up women for their other minyan, for the other aliyahs. Dehakol Mashlim, the minyan Shiva, because we clearly see that women do count for the 7 aliyahs. Afila Eved Shivcha V'Katan. But now, the Masikala, even though we turn around and say, Aval Chachamim Loi Tikra, the Amru Chachamim Loi Tikra Isha B'Toyer Mishnei Kovod HaTzibur, women cannot be called there because of Kovod HaTzibur. Hecha Deloi Efsha, in a situation where it's not possible to avoid this, Yidache Kovod HaTzibur Mipnei Pagam Kohen. The Kovod HaTzibur has to be set aside, because compared to the embarrassment to this Kohen, to have another Kohen called up after him, Kovod HaTzibur is less problematic than the covered habrius of the Kohen. Now, what do we do with this? What do we do with this? Now, because if you call another Kohen, the implication is the first Kohen is not a valid Kohen. His mother was a chalutza or a gerusha. Evidently, it's not so obvious, to the point where we will even call up a bunch of women afterwards. Now, this is very interesting. This is even. It's very interesting. This is a source that you won't see very often brought down. The question is, what do you do with a source like this? Now, if you're on the, if you like, the slightly left leaning side of the Orthodox world, you'll be waving this source in the air, saying, look, you see, the only reason why women are not called up is because rabbis don't want them to be. It's clearly mutter. That's not true, because that's not how halacha works. Halacha doesn't mean you root around and find leniencies here and leniencies there. You string them together, and hey presto, you've come up with a whole different. It's what? It's 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 a He's saying that Kovod HaTzibur is a lechatchila and gives way in place of other things. The Shaila is going to be like this. Are you going to turn around and say, today, there is no longer a problem of Kovod HaTzibur because the Tzibur doesn't mind if the woman is called up. In fact, the Tzibur will be honored for the woman to be called up. Why? Because women are prime ministers and women are chief executives and women run the whole companies and multinational organizations. So why would it be a problem for Kovod HaTzibur is how the argument will go. And surely, just like the possibility of insulting the Kohen was something which overrode Kovod HaTzibur, surely then public insult to women by excluding them from aliyahs is going to override any potential concern of that's how the argument will run. I'm just giving the argument so that you will see how it's played out. We have to work out next week, and we'll have a little bit more time now to do a couple of other things. We have to work out why you would not agree with that. What's the problem with that argument? Which we'll see in Yad Vashem. But there are sources. Why can't we use them? And we can't deny that they're there. But on the other hand, we can't turn them into something that they're not, which we'll deal with. I just want to deal with two other issues. Excuse me? No. Let me finish. No, because Kovod HaTzibur, Chazal paskened that the Tzibur has to have some element of Kovod. We have many halachas for Kovod HaTzibur. For example, you're not allowed to roll a Sefer Torah in public because everyone's sitting there waiting for something to happen. That's why do we think we get two Sefer Torah out on certain days? Why don't we just get one Sefer Torah and roll? It's not hard. Kovod HaTzibur. You don't leave people sitting around waiting. Kovod HaTzibur is very important. The Shaila is Kovod HaTzibur an objective thing? And if you don't mind that a woman is called up, then you don't understand what Kovod is and we need to educate you? Or is Kovod HaTzibur a subjective thing, which is, well, if you mind, then it's a problem, but if you don't mind, then it's fine. Bring the sheet back with you, please, next week. I'm not finished yet, but I'm saying when you come back next week, there are a few important sources in the middle that we need to deal with. For now, what I want, which deal with that objective-subjective issue, which we'll connect with next week. For now, let's just leave it with one last important issue, which is the issue of men and women singing together. And as I say, next week we'll fill in some of the gaps that we left out. This is a very famous tshuva, again, of the Sridei Eish, Rabbi Yochanan Weinberg. This is so famous, everybody refers to it, although it's clear to me that not everybody who refers to it has ever read it. Rav Weinberg was asked the following shaila by today I think we call it a Kiruv youth group, a bit like kind of Bnei Akiva type from years ago, that kind of NCSY sort of, whatever, it was called Yeshurun. It was a French youth group in the 1950s, and they were basically, right, so they asked in the following shaila, we have young men and young women who are trying to get more involved and reconnect them with Torah life. They want to sing Zmiras together. Can they sing Zmiris together on Shabbos in their youth group? And the Sridei Eish goes through all the issues. He writes that there were people who were very upset about this. It's priests, A, to have women and men mixing together, and B, to have women and men singing together. And in the end, he writes that for various reasons, it is permitted. Now, some of those reasons are based in technical halakhic issues in Kol Isha. Well, maybe there's two voices and you can't hear them properly. But the real reason, if you like, is based in the notion of Eis La'Sois La'Shem, that we have to do something because if we don't do something, these people will be lost. And what kind of an argument is that? We'll see about next week this meta-halakhic issue of Eis La'Sois La'Shem, when you bring in this kind of sort of override button that overrides other halachas. But he also says an interesting thing, which I just want to bring your attention to. So looking at number 44 at the beginning, Lechein hareisi lemanhigei ha'egun yeshurun. Therefore I have paskened for the leaders of the Yeshurun movement, she'yachayin lismachal gedolei Ashkenaz. They can rely on the German rabbonim who did allow men and women to sing zmiras together. She'hayu bekim b'chochmas ha'chinuch. They knew how to do chinuch. V'yadu ruach banois hador. They knew what women feel like today. Shehischanchu bebatei sefer, who are educated in schools. V'lamdu l'shoynes u'madayim. They learn languages and sciences. Sheyesh lahem regesh shel kvoid atzmai. The women these days, says the Sridei Eish, have a sense of self dignity. V'hein royas elbonu dechifa lochus lemachane be'issa shel surim aleihem lehishtativ v'zmiras hakodesh. They will feel publicly embarrassed. They feel offended, he says. if you tell them that they can't sing. They feel offended by that. Now, that is not the only reason that he allows them to sing together. But it's clear, he says, that the German educators and poskim, Rav Israel Hildesheimer and Rav David Zvi Hoffman, and those people who did give this heterim, they knew what they were doing. Therefore, they allowed women to sing Zmiras on Shabbos with the men. And they, you know what? They were successful. They produced women who were from and committed, etc. More than other countries. In other countries where they said no, 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 the women just said bye, bye, bye. And they walked out. And in Germany, where they adapted to some degree, based on other areas of halacha, the issues that were allowed, they were successful. I just want to leave you with 45, where he goes on in that tshuva, and he says, "V'yadu masha sipa hagon hamoreinu harav Yisrael Salanta." And it's well known what Rav Yisrael Salanta said. "B'shuvu ba'ashkenaz," when he came back from Germany, "v'sham nizdamim im hagon hatzadik Rav Israel Hildesheimer." And there he met up in Germany with Rav Israel Hildesheimer. "Bara oisoi ratzeshi urim b'tanach." He saw that Rav Hildesheimer gave classes in Tanakh. "V'shulchan aruch and halacha lifnei noshim tzeirus ubasulas," in front of unmarried women. "The koyaman," this is what Rav Yisrael Salanta said, "im yavo mirabani lita," if any of the rabbis of Lithuania came, "lahan he came be'idosai," in their communities to start teaching non-married women, "vadai she'aviru oisai mikunasa," they would give him the sack, he would be fired immediately. "V'chein hadin," and that's what should happen. "Mikol makom," nevertheless, says Rav Yisrael Salanta, "halavai she'yechelki began Eden in Hagon at Tzadik Rav Israel Hildesheimer." "Halavai that I should go to Gan Eden with Rav Hildesheimer, v'atam hu mishum eis la'asas Hashem heferis torasecha." And therefore, you are left with a very strong feeling here that social change in many areas really is a, in some views at least, legitimate reason for significant halachic change in many areas. The question is, where do we draw the lines? Correct. Every tshuva is in the context of its own circumstances, and nothing should be, no conclusion should be drawn from today until we see next week the context in which we have to put all this. Okay, have a good day. Right.
And they went off.
One second.